Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of Ag in Uncertain Times webinars. I'm John Newkirk. I'm with Washington State University, and I'm the MC again this morning. We got a treat for you. We have three folks that are going to review the Risk Navigator strategic risk management tools. That can be used to help producers understand and manage the five types of risk in their operations. Our speakers, I'll introduce them a bit more in a moment, are John Hewlett, who is also a member of our Ag in Uncertain Times webinar team, Jay Parsons from Colorado State University, and Duane Griffin. And I would like to take just a moment to say a bit about Duane's role in these webinars. Duane has been the brains and the hands-on behind the scenes that have kept this series going. And he and his colleagues at Montana State, where we're hosted, of course, have been through quite a challenging time the last couple of weeks. They upgraded to a new version of the software program, only to discover that only 9 people could get on. But they worked hard, and so here we are, all back on and going this morning. And I'd just like to take a moment to thank Duane for his effort in getting us to where we are today. You can enter questions for our presenters. You do it in the chat box over at the left. You type your question down in the small window at the bottom. Just place your cursor there, click on it. Type it in and then hit the return button that's over there on the right, and that'll send the questions in. Our team that working behind the scenes, if there are multiple questions about the same thing, they kind of merge them together, and then I'll present them to the team. We have the link to past webinars. You can see the web address up at the top. There's a simpler way to get to these. And that's just to Google Ag in Uncertain Times. That's, again, Google or use your search engine to type in Ag in Uncertain Times, and it'll bring you to this web page where you can listen to all of the presentations that have gone before from all of our series. And I'll just have to say, we did an experiment yesterday in a workshop, a marketing workshop with a group of producers in Eastern Washington, and we used parts of these to introduce them not only to this series but to webinars in general. And I can tell you, we had a very positive response to that approach. Our December series starts on December the 2nd, and we're really pleased to be able to have Jason Henderson, who is an economist and also an executive vice president, I believe is his title, at the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. And Jason brings a wealth and a depth and breadth of understanding about agriculture and the financial situation and credit. He's going to be there to help kind of wrap up. I will be giving a short presentation as well, trying to pull some of the nuggets as we were doing the past presenters. We got a wealth of information, still very good. December the 9th, the Regional Extension Risk Management Education Centers, each of their directors will be on talking about their programs. They've got a grant program, all of them open right now, where you can get grant funding to do some of the work that we've identified here in this series. And then on December 16th, we're going to have a session on how you can pull together and use all of this information. There are other resources out there. The mitnet.extension.org, which is part of eExtension, also has a wealth of information, including links to all of our information. If you want to watch the slides on full screen, just hit the full screen button. You won't be able to see the chat box. So if you want a chat window, so if you want to enter a question, you got to toggle then back out by again hitting that full screen button. Well, I think we're ready to go then to our team of presenters. We're going to do a bit of a different format this morning. We have three presenters, and they're going to hand off to each other. They're all part of the same integrated presentation. And I believe that John Hewlett will be up first. And John has been on our series before in the past. He's also part of what is working in the background to keep the technology as well as it does. Technology isn't perfect yet. If you have some issues with audio or whatever, please enter that information in the chat box and we'll try to work on it. But John is a farm and ranch management specialist at the University of Wyoming and a member of the regional Right Risk and Right Navigator teams. He has also coordinated past efforts of the regional WIRE program. And I have really appreciated work getting to know John a lot better over the last 3 or 4 years and working with him. And he also has a small commercial operation himself with his family and brings a wealth of insights. Following John, and I'm part of this team this morning on Risk Navigator Tools, is Jay Parsons, Assistant Professor and Associate Director of the Individualized Mathematics Program at Colorado State University. Jay Parsons, I hope I said that right, is also the founder and president of Optimal Ag Consulting, Fort Collins, Colorado, where he and his wife have also formed a subsidiary company called Optimal Livestock Services. Jay's professional efforts are committed to helping farm and ranch families succeed. And the final member of this team is Dwayne Griffith. And Dwayne is an extension farm management specialist at Montana University. His interests include production economics, financial analysis covering all aspects of farm and ranch business performance. And this, these three individuals probably know this subject matter about as good as anyone that you can find, and also have a wealth of very practical experience of putting it to work, helping farmers and ranchers manage risks. So without further ado, I want to turn this over to John, and the program is yours until we get back to Q&A at the end.
Okay, well, thank you, John, for that very kind introduction. And on behalf of all three of us, I certainly want to thank you, John, for the opportunity and the team working behind the scenes to make all of this possible, the opportunity to make this presentation today. Our hope is we can offer some tools and techniques for folks looking to better manage risk in these uncertain times that we're facing in the current day's environment. It might be helpful to just review this morning what we mean by risk. And typically when we talk about this, we're talking about the probability of an event occurring that can impact current profit level. That's the first thing we usually think of. And then probably the second thing we'll think of is financial situation in terms of our equity position and ability to stay in business in the longer term. The thing we don't often think about in ag, I think, is satisfaction and well-being is another source of risk and a threat or a factor in our ability to best manage and use good management practices and so on. And risk can really affect that through some psychological and other kinds of human resource factors that we don't often consider. And in fact, risk can come from a number of different sources. Traditionally, we think of five different sources of risk. The first two, production and marketing, are the ones we probably pay most attention to in agriculture, in the fact that weather and forces that we really don't have a lot of control over can affect the yield and quality of our commodities that we produce. Forces outside of our control also tend to adjust and cause changes in the market environment that we face, and so changing in the price that we receive and in fact, the prices of inputs that we need to actually make those crops and livestock commodities come about. The third one there, financial risk, is another certainly area of risk that we pay a lot of attention to in terms of our ability to repay debt and also to meet cash flow demands through an operating year. So those first three we think about quite a lot. More recently, we've thought more and have had to pay more attention to legal risk in terms of our contractual responsibilities and protection against certain kinds of liability risks that often in the past were not something that we had to worry about. And finally, human resource risk, both in terms of employees and making sure that the jobs get done on a day-to-day basis, but also in terms of ourselves as managers and making sure that we have the skills and abilities that are necessary and capacity to actually carry out the plans and whatnot that we have in mind for our organization. Well, this morning, what we have in mind is to present material that comes from a text that was just released at the end of October, titled Applied Risk Management in Agriculture. And actually, the three of us represent a whole team of folks that have been working over the last several years to get this put together. This text includes the strategic risk management process that you see described on the screen there, and the 10 steps that are encompassing what we're calling a strategic risk management process, allowing folks to manage risk in a more strategic and comprehensive way. So we thought it would be helpful this morning to briefly recap what those 10 steps are before we move in to the discussion of the tools that help to accomplish each and every one of those 10 steps. So this process, the strategic risk management process, starts with a segment on strategy and looking at exactly where we want to take the operation in the long run. And so we not only do that by looking at what resources we have to work with, but also describing the direction for the operation. So the very first step here is to conduct a financial health checkup, if you will. Trying to get a better understanding of the extent of the resource base that we have to work with, as well as the health and viability of the financial resources that we have at our disposal. The second step is to determine risk preference. So at this point, we would be looking at how much risk we're comfortable with managing, and not only us, but the other players that might be involved, whether that be a spouse or children or aunts, uncles, cousins, whoever all it may be that we're working with to manage this operation, considering their preferences and tolerances for managing risk and willingness to carry that, as well as differences between sources of risk and how our management strategy is accommodating at those types of risk. The third step is to establish risk goals for the operation, really describing where we want to go with risk management and the specifics of how we plan to get from where we currently are to that point where we're more comfortable with the risk management plan and the levels of risk that we're accepting with the various enterprises that we're managing. The third segment then of the strategic process is the tactical level, and at that stage we're actually looking at how we're planning to accomplish those strategic goals. So really choosing the right things to do, if you will, and the specific steps and techniques we plan to use to move from where we are to ultimately where we want to be. The first step of that tactical level is to determine the sources of risk. And here we're trying to evaluate the threat, or in some cases, the opportunities that risks represent, and how those vary from one source to another, because they won't be equal in all cases. And we're looking at the risk to not only the business and the business structure, but also to the people that are involved in the management of the operation. The fifth step then of the process will be looking at identifying the various management alternatives available to us for managing risk. And those are usually quite a few, and trying to sort out which ones are best can be quite a challenge. But we're also trying to consider, as we look at these various alternatives, how they will help move us either toward our goals or perhaps taking us away from our ultimate direction and destination where we'd like to be in terms of managing risk as well as other dimensions of the operation. The sixth step will be to determine the likelihood of the outcome. So as we look at those various alternatives open to us, we look at estimating the likelihoods using statistical methods to calculate or approximate what we think is most likely, and then deciding between those courses of action using that information to help us decide which may be best as we move forward. The seventh step is to actually choose the best risk management alternative by having ranked those various alternatives and looking at the pros and cons, or trade-offs, if you will, between the management alternatives and how they help to either improve our risk profile or perhaps move us towards some other more risky alternatives and perhaps represent a greater threat. And so through this step, we actually weigh the pros and cons, the pluses and minuses, and actually make a choice then to implement into the operational stage. The operational management stage then is to actually implement those plans, making them happen on a day-to-day basis. So those activities that we do week to week or month to month in the operating cycle that actually move us toward our goals in the longer run. So here we're concerned with actually making sure that those steps get accomplished in the right way. Implementing those plans, actually getting them to happen on the ground through the management and labor that we apply as farm and ranch managers and in control of the resource flows and so on through the operating year. So implementing those plans is then followed by monitoring and adjusting, because the best laid plans often don't go just as they've been designed. And so we absolutely need to monitor our resource use and the implementation of those plans, as well as adjust to make sure that we stay on course as we move forward over the course of a year. Finally, replanning is a step that we suggest that people stop and take an inventory, if you will, of what kind of performance has occurred up to that point in the operating year. We recommend at least annually a person would do this, but actually considering where we are with our goals, our enterprise activities, our inputs and outputs of resources, are they still at appropriate levels? Is our resource base still healthy? And are we still moving on the right track? In summary, our strategic goals really are determining where we want to go with the operation. Where we are now is set by setting up or investigating the health of our financial resources, our risk preferences I talked about a second ago, and then our sources of risk and what threats we feel from those sources. How we're going to actually get to where we want to be will be laid out through tactical and operational plans. We'll talk about that just a little more today. What we want to focus on today with the majority of our presentation is to discuss the tools that we've developed through the Risk Navigator program to help implement this 10-step process in a typical farm or ranch setting. And to do that, we're going to use a case study that's covered in our textbook. In fact, there is a chapter in the text that lays out the whole background with this farm, which is known as the EWS farm, home of Aaron Sprague in the lower right-hand picture with his family, but also includes his father and brother-in-law, which are listed and shown in the picture in the upper left-hand corner there. We will use the Sprague situation to demonstrate how we'll use the Risk Navigator tools in a typical setting, and we'll start off this morning with determining the financial health of the Sprague situation. And to do that, Dwayne Griffith is going to lead us through a brief presentation of that financial health and welfare of the family and the situation, as well as looking into the use of the RD financial tool, which we've designed to provide the ability to look into the financial statements, the income earning capacity of the business, as well as the long-term viability through financial analysis of the performance of the business as a whole. So with that, Dwayne, I will turn it your way.
Thank you, John. As John indicated, that the first step in this process, this 10-step process, was check up on your financial health. That requires a fair amount of busy work, and what we have today as a presentation is a way to help understand your financial analysis that you do, the information that's on those financial statements, and an objective is to get you thinking about how to use this stuff to communicate with your lender. Probably you're doing a little bit more of that these days than you were a couple of years ago. What you see on the screen right now is a the opening page of that financial health program, and I would encourage you to use your full screen toggle button that you see on your screen if you need to blow this up to full screen to make it more readable. We have an introduction page. In this case, just a quick step through this to show you what's available. We have a page where you can enter your own data, and this one we have preloaded with some EWS Farms information for their crop mix. You can enter the crop revenue, the crop expenses, livestock revenue, livestock expenses. EWS Farms doesn't happen to have any livestock. And the taxes and insurance, assets and liabilities. It's a quick way to provide asset and liability information. You have to do this in a little bit more detail with a lender. But this provides a setup and a quick start operation to get you to the financial statements. Now, the financial statements here are a condensed form. This program is called RD Financial and stands for Reader's Digest Condensed Version of Financial Statements. In the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a very condensed form of the balance sheet. Assets in the first couple of columns there and liabilities on the right-hand side of the balance sheet. If you look in the over in the lower right corner of the balance sheet, you'll see a change in equity from beginning to the end of the year, $10,890. And just above that a little ways, where you see the operating loan carryover, that operating loan carryover at the end of the year is zero. If we go down, below the balance sheet is a cash flow statement. We have our inflows and our outflows on the right-hand side of that, and we have a net cash flow positive $57,831. In the upper right corner, there's an income statement, and again, a condensed form. If we go right to the bottom of that, our net income for this operation was $110,890. And in the bottom portion of that lower right corner is a statement owner equity. That's something that reconciles the other financial statements and helps make sure that the information presented on those other statements is correct. The discrepancy is zero, which gives us a good feeling that, in fact, we have a good set of information and we can trust this financial information going forward. This set of financial statements was prepared by EWS Farms about December of 2008. They do a good job of tracking, monitoring their financial information all the way through the 10 steps that John covered. And in terms of planning, projecting ahead, this is what they thought would happen during that time frame in terms of projecting ahead. Now, in that projection, I've used my one of the pop-up menus here in the upper right-hand corner. You can see I've loaded the crop prices and yields. And then down across the bottom of the screen, in December of 2008, what they thought the prices would be for their crop mix here are $5.75 for corn, or $5.75 for winter wheat, $4 for corn, and they raise both corn on irrigated and dry land. Their yields there are also shown. That's what they estimated that they would have, which is kind of a long-run average. And those prices and yields then are built into this set of information. December 2008, they thought this projection, they thought was relatively sound, but we all know what has happened since December of 2008. Well, along with the information on the financials, which looks pretty good, if you took this to your lenders, they would, I think, be pretty pleased with that. But your lenders also use some other information. They also use ratios. And the ratios that were calculated using the information on those financial statements are on our ratios tab here on this piece of software. And they're broken up into liquidity, solvency, profitability, repayment capacity, and financial efficiency. We're not going to go through all of those today, but you can see that at least in our starting position here, in our projection from December 2008, all of these ratios look fairly well. Liquidity is really pretty strong. Current ratio is 8.21, solidly in the green. Working capital is about halfway through the yellow range in these red, yellow, and green indicators on the screen kind of give you an idea where that ratio value would be and what the industry thinks those ratios should be. And your lenders use these ratios to evaluate your particular operation, even if you don't. The financial information you bring them, they calculate these ratios and create their own set. I think it's good for us if we can understand these ratios, how they're impacted by changes in the operation, and how the lender is viewing yours. Solvency, the solvency group of ratios are all very solidly in the green. The debt-to-asset ratio is so good that it doesn't even show up on the bottom end of our alert bar here. Profitability, however, is just a little bit on the sketchy side. Rate of return on business equity is in the red. Operating profit margin is in the red. Net business income is in the yellow range. And you can see that's the $110,890. Rate of return on business assets is almost up in the green. But if there was a category of ratios you would worry about, now at least, it would be the profitability group. And repayment capacity looks fairly good also. And I think we'll stop there. The credit, these ratios are combined often into credit scores. And not all banks or lenders use credit scoring. But here's an example of a term loan credit score. And you can see the different ratios that we just looked at are combined in a way to develop an overall score. And the term loan on this one is a score of 150. It gives a ranking of how that information is categorized. And over here in the lower left corner, it gives the term loan credit score solidly in the green and the operating loan credit score solidly in the green, also with 1.6. An operating loan credit score information is on its own separate page. That's a brief overview of the financial statements. This is a pretty quick look. When you determine your financial health, you probably get into it in much more detail, but the concepts are the same here. And as our starting point of December 2008, well, things didn't turn out like we had planned here. And what we want to do now is start to show you the impacts that many of you have experienced this year if you're a producer. And that is a pretty sharp decline in prices from our expectations back then. Well, to do that, I have a couple of ways of doing this. I can go down here on this 575 and I can just start dragging the cursor down and it'll change the price. But I'm going to go down and change the price to what it was this fall, about this time of year. In this area of the world, wheat was selling for $3.80. Corn was selling for $3.40, so we have to change our price on both dry land corn and wheat. So as we change those, you can see all of that financial information changes instantly, showing the implications of a price decline. Where we used to have a positive cash flow, that's now zero. It's in this particular software, it never gets to be a negative. It's always somebody finances that someplace. And that zero turns into a $32,710 operating loan carryover. The bank financed that decrease in prices. We now have about a minus $80,000 net equity change, and our net income is down to $20,349. Our financial statements are still balanced, so we've got good information in terms of the actual data. It just doesn't look as promising as it did before. Now, obviously, as we change prices, that has an impact on our financial statements, but it also impacts our ratios. The ratio, current ratio fell from 8.2 down to 3.35, but it's still very solidly in the green. And our working capital ratio has slipped a little bit more toward the red range. Solvency ratios are still very good in this operation. Our profitability ratios are starting to look pretty bad. Negative 0.66, minus 2.31, minus 0.02, and net business income is toward the low end of the red. And of course, then our credit scoring, if the bank or the lenders use this kind of a model, our credit scores are no longer solidly in the green. Operating loan credit score is up in the red range, and our term loan credit score is pretty much through that yellow kind of alert level range and heading toward the red. And you can view the information on each of those as we go along. Let's go back to the financial statements a minute. As prices decline throughout the year, this operation happens to be in an area where they've gotten quite a bit of moisture this year. And I think as producers and educators, we have heard what's happening in those industries as we have high moisture years. And this one is no different. So as we struggle with getting crops harvested, I'm going to change the crops to a different yield level. I'm actually going to increase their wheat yield a little bit earlier, that they got that done in time, and change those corn yields, which is harvest a little bit later, to 10 bushels less for the irrigated and 30 bushels less for the 10 bushels less for the dry land, 30 bushels less for the irrigated corn. Again, as we change those yields at the bottom of the page, that has an immediate impact on those financials. Our net income now is a minus number, down from a positive 21,000 to about a minus 14,000. Our net equity change is now a minus 113,000, and we now have an operating loan carryover of about $67,000. Again, obviously, as if this came true, we're doing a little bit of what ifs now. Those impact our ratios. Our liquidity ratios continue to degrade, but are still, the current ratio is still above our 2.0 level here, and our working capital ratio is almost crept its way into the red. Solvency ratios have degraded. Our profitability ratios are all in the tank. So as you communicate with your lender, you watch this going on your own operation, your lender is watching these numbers in the background. If you're not preparing for them, I think it would help all of us if we can learn to use and understand these to help communicate with the lender. And our term and operating loan credit model scores are also degraded. Kind of heaping a bad situation, making that a little bit worse, is that one of the other things that's happened across the country in the last few months is a reduction in land values, decrease in an outlook for the profitability of agriculture in the future has caused lenders to decrease land values. Does that reduced profitability gets bid into land prices, which eventually shows up on a balance sheet. Now, to show that effect on the financial statements, I have entered a ballpark number, minus $250,000 as a decrease in land values. That number shows up on the ending balance sheet, but creates a negative $363,000 net equity change from the beginning to the end of the year. Didn't affect our profitability. That's still minus $13,000. But finally, we have this statement owner equity coming into play that this doesn't look right. It's telling us we have a discrepancy at $250,000. And we can alleviate that by decreasing or showing on the statement owner equity our asset valuation change. And this simply keeps us honest. It just says that that wasn't created by the operation of the business. It was a result of the stroke of a pen, and that affects our financial health and condition. That works through the ratios and the credit scoring again. With that, then, we now have kind of a fast forward from December of 08 to the current time period, and the EWS Farms financial condition has degraded significantly. So what do? We have to follow through this 10-step process and start to think about a plan that will help us get through 2010. And I think, Jay, you're going to take over now and continue on this conversation about the tools that are available on this with Risk Navigator, and start that conversation that EWS Farms is having about, okay, now what? So take it away, Jay.
Okay, thank you, Dwayne, and hopefully everybody can hear me just fine and see my beginning slide here. We're now ready to move on into the second step of the SRM process, which is, and take a look at a particular tool that we have to help you determine your risk preference. In any agricultural setting of any significant size, it's highly likely that you're going to have multiple people in different areas of the operation making decisions at any given point in time. And any time that you have a management situation with multiple decision makers, it's also likely that you're going to have multiple risk preferences being represented. And reasons for that can be a number of different reasons. One obvious one is a generational difference. As John prefaced with our case farm, for the EWS Farms, we have a situation where Aaron is a son coming back to the farm. So obviously they're going to have to deal with different generational differences there when it comes to their tolerance or preference for accepting risk. There can also be gender differences involved, and of course life stage or family differences. People with young kids and a long planning horizon are going to have different preferences in terms of what they're willing to do with their assets at that stage in their life versus somebody who has spent their entire life building up those assets and is a few years away from retiring. And then, of course, from the family side of things, it's not just about the kids, but there's also the spouse and how involved the spouse is in the operation, and that, of course, can come into play terms of influencing risk preferences. And then the last one I'd point out is life experiences. We all can probably, given a few moments, come up with an example in our lives where we've been burned by something. And even though we might know in our mind that that was just pure chance or pure bad luck, it could have created an area in our life where we just aren't willing to take chances anymore. In the case of EWS Farms, we got a situation in our case farm where Aaron is returning to the family farm. So in addition to the obvious generational differences that he has to deal with between him and his father, he does have young kids, and he's got a long planning horizon before retirement, whereas his father is looking at a 10 to 20 year horizon before his retirement. So they're going to have some differences there in terms of the chances that they're willing to take. And then in the life experience category, Aaron is he's got a fresh education, and he feels pretty well versed in areas of risk management. And in particular, he thinks he can help out tremendously on the farm in terms of addressing market risk. So he's bringing that background to the operation, whereas his dad has 30-plus years of making risk management decisions for the farm and operating in his local market environment and seeing how things vary from one year to the next. So all of these things need to be taken into account as EWS Farms or as any operation puts together their SRM process and their risk management plan. So I'm going to go from here into the tool. And the tool that I'm going to show you is our risk preference calculator. Let me go ahead and blow this up so you guys can see it good. And our risk preference calculator actually has three tools built into it. One of the tools is a quiz, and I'm going to spend a few minutes showing you some of that quiz here in a moment. The other two tools, which I won't have time to go into in any detail here today, are the Estimate My Preference tool and the Industry Risk Preference tool. And let me just show you those real quickly, what they look like. Estimate My Risk Preference tool is a sort of a gambling wager type of tool, but it's in an agricultural context of growing onions. Basically, you have a risk displayed for you in terms of the risk of not having a crop and the risk of having a crop and having a payoff, and how much would you be willing to pay for that. So there's a series of four questions here that you go through and you answer in that context, and then at the bottom we give you a risk preference and a risk tolerance score. The industry risk preference tool is based off of a study by Howard back in 1999 that looks at business risk preferences, and you put in your net sales, your net income, and your net equity, and you're given a risk preference score based off of industry averages for similar net sales, net income, and net equity operations. And this is business in general, not necessarily agricultural operations. So let's take a little bit of time here then to take a look at this quiz, and I'll show you how the quiz works. There's a series of 13 multiple choice questions, and you simply work your way through and answer those questions, and they're similar to this first one, question one, where you're asked, in general, how would your best friend describe you as a risk taker? And let's just say, for example, Aaron and his dad are looking at this, and they both decide that they are willing to take risks after completing adequate research. So they would select that option there. And you'd work your way all the way through the quiz, all 13 questions. And I'll go ahead and skip to the results here, show you what the results screen looks like. And in the end, you're given a risk tolerance score, and this will go from 0 to 47 depending upon how you answer those questions. In this case, the risk tolerance score is 12, which indicates a very low tolerance for risk. And let's just pretend for a moment that this is Aaron's dad. He went through and took this quiz and come up with this score here. And then Aaron's going to go through and answer questions for himself, and I'll go ahead and change a few of these and show you how sensitive this is or how it adjusts. The second question on the quiz here is that you are on a TV game show, and you can choose one of the following. Which would you take? Aaron's dad said he'd take the $1,000 in cash, which wouldn't be uncommon for somebody, an older gentleman, to look at that and say, well, I didn't have any money before, I'll just take $1,000. Aaron is, he can calculate expected values, and he likes to take little chances, and he looks at this and says, oh, well, 5% chance of winning $100,000 that has an expected payoff of $5,000, I'll go ahead and take that chance. Another question where they're likely to be different is on question four here. If you unexpectedly received $20,000 to invest, what would you do? Aaron's dad said he would put it in the bank. Aaron says, well, that's silly. I would invest in stocks and mutual funds and let that grow at greater than the rate of inflation and turn into something more valuable. Continuing on to the second page, question five, in terms of experience, how comfortable are you investing in stocks or stock mutual funds? Aaron's dad is not comfortable at all. Aaron, he's very comfortable with that. Question six, when you think of the word risk, which of the following word comes to mind first? Aaron's dad says, well, loss comes to first right off the bat. Aaron says, no, risk is an opportunity. I know where there's risk, there's reward. And continuing on to the next page, question 11, another investment question where you are left an inheritance of $100,000. Which of these investments would you do, basically, under the condition that you have to invest all of the money in one of the following choices? Again, Aaron's dad would put it in a savings account. Aaron came through and says, I'd put that in stocks. And then on the final page, again, another investment question, question 12 up here at the top, $20,000 to invest. Which of the following investment choices would you find most appealing? Aaron's dad, who's much closer to retirement, would put 60% in low-risk investments, 30% in medium, 10% in high-risk investments. Aaron, who has a much longer planning horizon, would only go with 10% in the low-risk investments, 40% in medium, and 50% in high. So let's just say Aaron did that, and he comes through and gets to the end. His risk tolerance score, not surprisingly, is much higher than his dad's. It's up at 25, which would put him in the average to moderate tolerant range for risk. In our textbook, we actually have Aaron's real answers, which aren't too far off from what I put in here. His risk tolerance score did end up being at 31, which is actually above average tolerance risk, and his dad's was quite low. And I don't think it was quite down to 12, but it was in the low category. So there is a significant difference between the two of them. And the main thing here, and you can have huge differences, by the way. I use this risk preference calculator in my graduate level products to profits class, where we do have a risk management unit. And this last spring in particular, I had a young couple, an engaged couple, that both took this quiz. And the male had a score of 41, and his fiance had a score of 17, and needless to say, the break time had some very active and spirited conversation taking place as they discussed their different scores and their difference in tolerance for risk. The main point of these tools is to point out those differences, and as managers and as decision makers, people need to recognize and respect differences in risk preference as they go through and try to make decisions as a team. So with that, our next stage here is to move on to the strategic goals. So let me go ahead and stop sharing. And John, you can take it over from there.
Okay, the third step in the strategic risk management process that we've outlined is to establish risk goals. And we have a number of different worksheets and tools for helping to accomplish that. This will be the first. It's a strategic goal worksheet. And if we zoom in here a little bit, we have the worksheet divided into several sections, the top section being where we would actually record the or write in the strategic goal description. Middle section describes the goal costs in terms of the resources required to accomplish those goals. The bottom section list where we can list a set of tactical objectives and then operational plans there at the very bottom. So we have this worksheet currently populated with the EWS Farms number one strategic goal, and we actually recommend folks prioritize their goals, so this would be their top priority was to ensure short and long-term financial success by maintaining business profitability while expanding the overall business and its financial resource base. So that was what they, after consultation amongst themselves and due deliberation, came up with as the number one strategic goal. The resource section It describes resources that they laid out what would be needed to accomplish that goal. And those are recorded here in this section on an operational plan basis. So there's kind of a numbering strategy we recommend in the text that might be a little confusing here. But basically, these are the various human resources that they laid out for the human resource column, and then the financial resources that they decided, and a number of them which they've left to be determined yet, actually, would be needed to accomplish those various dimensions of the strategic goal. What I wanted to focus on this morning with this worksheet is the second tactical objective. To accomplish that strategic goal, they laid out a number of different objectives, and these could be viewed as kind of waypoints or hurdles that they've got to get over on their way to ultimately accomplishing that strategic goal, and that might be 10 or 15 years out, whereas the tactical objectives might be things that they do in the next couple of years or maybe 5 years out. One of those steps, which is listed here as 1-2, the second tactical objective is to allow for the inclusion of off-farm incomes while providing enough stability from the farm to make off-farm's incomes voluntary. And so in the wake of Duane's analysis and the impending change in profitability of the operation, this may be an aspect of their goals and the set of goals that they've laid out that they might need to reconsider. In fact, down here in the operational plan section, we have 1-2.1, which is the first operational plan that they've described to go along with that tactical objective, would be to assess the financial needs of each on-farm family, target what their living allocations are, and the feasibility of that family living level given the current resource base of the farm. And so they had planned to complete that back in 2005 and likely did get that accomplished. We didn't publish their findings in the textbook, but we have these various goals and things laid out in the text if you might be interested in taking a look at that. The point I want to make is not only does this worksheet help folks like EWS Farms and the various generations of the Spraggs to communicate about their goals, objectives, and plans, it gives them a place to write that down. But in the face of changing and uncertain times moving forward, it also gives them something to work with to begin planning for what-if analysis as they move forward and developing the plans that they will use to address those uncertainties into the future. So this would be one of the worksheets that we've developed. Another worksheet that we've put together is one called the Transition Planning Worksheet. And that worksheet is designed once the person and family has worked through the strategic goals, various tactical objectives, and the detailed operational plans, actually lay out kind of in a grid sort of format of what kinds of things that they need to accomplish and by when. So this worksheet has basically three sections in it as well. This top section is a description of the enterprises and the various activities that might need to change based on their plans and adjustments that they have in mind. The middle section, which takes up the majority of the worksheet, is a description of the various resources that they're going to use, that they draw from to accomplish those enterprises, and what changes they might make to either inputs in the upper section or the outputs of that resource in terms of implementing a plan or making changes to what they're currently doing to see things improve into the future. The lower section or bottom section of this worksheet gives us a place to consider the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, or a SWOT analysis along the way as we look at developing those plans into the future. The columns then are actually a description of various points in time, in kind of waypoints that they need to cross over and accomplish as they move forward, implementing changes, again, in the enterprises or in the use of the resources. So if we looked at the lack of profitability and what we might change in the EWS Farms strategy to improve that situation, they might could consider improving the yields from their corn enterprises through the use of maybe improved varieties or some other cultural practice, and we've laid out kind of a strategy there, moving through time out as far as 10 years into the future, 11 years up to 2020, and they're kind of planning some improvement there. In the dryland wheat enterprise, they're looking at trying to reduce expenses as a way of improving performance of that enterprise. They've got some challenges here in terms of the resource base. In particular, in that area of the state, they're experiencing increased regulation of water and the use of water, even from various wells that they have on the place. And so they're challenged to try to reduce the use of irrigation water, and they plan to try to use some different techniques and strategies to do that into the future. Ultimately, maybe reducing irrigation water use as much as 15% out about 11 years from today. Trying to improve corn yields, as we've already talked about. In terms of human resources, and to accomplish that improvement in irrigation efficiency, they might need to take a look at getting some training on drip irrigation systems and what it takes to manage those. Financial resources, they've proposed some improvement, not only in the current ratio its performance in terms of the business overall and all enterprises combined to move from a current of about 7.3% up to maybe 15% out at 2020. Improvement in their debt-to-asset ratio, although it's not bad now, but repaying some of that debt and getting a better balance of current and longer-term debt. And again, the lower section is a way of kind of taking a look at where they would be at various stages along through that planning process and trying to determine whether there might be some strengths or weaknesses that they should be aware of, but also outside of the business, what opportunities or threats might be represented by following this kind of a strategy. So with that, those are the tools for the determining risk goals, which we have time for this morning. I'm going to turn it back to Jay, who's going to now look at the risk profiler and risk influence tools to better establish where they are and the tactics that they want to use in terms of how to implement these plans now into the future.
Okay, hopefully everybody can see my computer screen now. And as we move into the tactical stage, the first step in the tactical stage is to determine your risk sources. And one of the tools that we have to help you do that is what we call the Risk Influence Calculator. We actually have two versions of this available in our online toolbox. One of them is unpopulated, in which when you load it up, all of these blanks that you see are unpopulated with data or information. And then the other one we have up there is called the EWS Farms version, where we have it pre-populated with the example from our book, our case farm, EWS Farms. Regardless of which one you load, these are changeable. So for example, in the market price risk type here, they've identified corn price. We could easily change that to just grain prices in general. And then in the description column of this, that's for your own use in terms of why that is a risk to you or what you're worried about in particular for that risk. Now you see here that we have this split up into the five areas of risk that John mentioned in his introduction of market, production, financial, human, and institutional risk. And in each of them, you can identify a couple of different risk types. And then the way this tool works is as you move over to the right, you can assign a value from 0 to 10 for the probability that that risk will impact your operation. So for grain prices in the EWS Farms situation, they have a case farm, they have corn and wheat is, you know, 99% of their income. And so that's going to, and with the current market environment with things dropping down considerably in the last 12 months in terms of prices, they might bump this up at this point to say 7 and say that the probability that grain prices have an impact on my operation is fairly high. And then the next column over, the impact column, is where you actually, again, put a value of 0 to 10 on if something bad happens in that risk category, what is the impact it does have on my operation. Again, because I rely heavily on grain sales, of course, a large drop in grain prices would have a huge impact. So they might put that as a 10. Those two columns, the probability value and the impact value, combine to give us the risk value. And the risk value is simply an average of the two. So in rounding up, of course, in this case, the average would be 8 if we look at it there. So our probability impact tab then, if we want to go and take a look at that, what it does is it takes all those risks that you've input it on your data matrix and puts them in a chart. And the idea is to show you those risks that you should be worried about. So if I look at this chart with quadrant 1 down in the lower left, those are those risks that have a low probability of occurring and a low impact on my operation if they do occur. So they're the risks I would be least worried about addressing. As I move from left to right there to quadrant 2, we see the risks that, if they do occur, are going to have a large impact on our operation, but there's a low probability that they will occur. In this case, that pink dot represents the family, and when they did this data matrix, when Aaron filled this out, that was looking at, will his dad retire? And if his dad does retire, that's going to have a big impact on the operation, but he views that as a low probability of occurring. As you move up into the upper left, you got quadrant 3, which is where you have a low impact, but a high probability. And then, of course, the risks that you're going to be most concerned about are the ones up in quadrant 4. Up and to the right, the high impact, high probability of occurring, and in this case, that's where grain prices would fall. The other piece of this is the actual influence that you have on these risks. If we go back to our data matrix, we see the far right-hand column. Again, we can move these around up or down if we like in terms of what we view as our ability to have an influence on this risk. And it could be an influence on the probability of something occurring. It could be an influence on the impact if it does occur. In this case, as I mentioned earlier, Aaron's coming back to the farm freshly educated on marketing alternatives, and he feels that he has a large ability to have an influence on the grain prices the operation will receive. So he puts an 8 in there as to indicate that. The risk influence tab then combines the risk and the influence again in a chart, two-dimensional chart, with influence going from left to right and risk going from bottom to top. And again, we concern ourselves primarily with the upper right quadrant, quadrant 4, because those represent the risks that we feel we should be most concerned about in terms of the probability and impact on the operation, and also the risks that we feel we have the most ability to influence. So in this case, in our case farm, in actuality, when they went through and worked on this, grain prices did come out to be the area that they wanted to address. So after you've determined the risk sources, and particularly the risks that you want to address, the next step in the SRM process is to identify your management alternative. So If the operation has identified grain prices as the risk they want to address, then, of course, they need to take a look at the different alternatives that they might use to address that. And John's going to get into more detail on this when he looks at the risk ranker tool, but just to preface that, primary tools that are alternatives that they looked at was the cash markets, which is what predominantly Aaron's dad had been using over the years, and also forward contracting, which he'd done a little bit with the local elevator. And the next piece that Aaron wanted to bring to the operation was hedging, and the idea of putting a floor underneath your market price out in advance in order to protect yourself. So in the end, what Aaron ended up working on here was a more comprehensive marketing plan. And I'll save that for John's presentation when he goes through the risk ranker in terms of how some of that stuff turned out. But in general, the idea is to keep an open mind and to look at all the different alternatives that you can then use to address whatever risk it is that you identify here as where you need to focus your attention. Okay, the next step in the SRM process is to estimate likelihoods. One of the tools that we have to work with there is our risk profiler tool. And one of the most common questions we get when we go out and do risk management workshops is, you know, where do we get the probabilities and the outcomes and the different things that can occur, in particular the probabilities. So the risk profiler is a tool that we put together to hopefully help people do some of that. And again, there's three tools built into this particular tool. The one that you see right now is one where you input just three pieces of data, the most likely outcome that you think will occur, a minimum value that you think could occur, and a maximum value that you think could occur. I'm going to come back and play with this in a moment, and it's also built into our stochastic budget generator, which I'll show you in a second, too. The second tab here is one where you can describe your profile using basically five data points where you input the probability that that will outcome will occur and then the value if it does occur. So, for instance, you see the 10% probability attached in the second row here to a value of $1.26. Again, this tool is built into one of our other tools, which John will be showing you, our risk ranker tool, so I won't go into the details of that right now. And then the third tool, which I'll just point out here, is one that is of particular value when it comes to dealing with yield data, because most producers with can readily pull out their crop insurance information and pull up their last 10 years of production history in terms of yield and enter in 10 data values. So this is the last tool that we have here to help people take a look at their risk profile for a particular variable that they're concerned with. So let me go back to the very first one, the minimum, most likely, and maximum. And let me just put in some numbers here. Dwayne had mentioned that the prices we were looking at for wheat, in particular in the fall, were $3.80. So let's go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and enter in our current situation here where perhaps the most likely wheat price would be $3.80. And let's say on the low end we're looking at $3.20. And let's say on the high end we're looking at, we'll go ahead and be a little optimistic here, we'll put in $5.50. Okay, so let's say that's what we think our marketing scenario will look like this marketing year for our wheat crop. The numbers change to the right in terms of the statistics that you see automatically, and then of course the graphs, the histogram, the probability density function, and the cumulative density function will change automatically as you change those numbers. Now, rather than go into the details here with this graph, I'm going to go to the last tool I wanted to show you, which is our stochastic crop budget generator. And this tool actually has that risk profiler tool that I just left built into it in the context of a crop budget. So in this particular case, the default that we have put in here is a wheat, winter wheat enterprise budget. The cells that you see in color are cells that you can vary in a stochastic sense by entering in a minimum, most likely, and a maximum value in the box to the right here. So if I focus on, in particular, I won't get into the crop yield or the operating cost per acre here today in the interest of time, but if I went into the crop price for wheat and entered in those same numbers that I did on the risk profiler, $3.20 for a minimum, $3.80 for a maximum, or most likely, excuse me, and let's go with $5.50 for a maximum. What that does is it's going to take this information that I have here in my static budget and turn it into a stochastic budget. So I can view just that price distribution by clicking on the price button. and I see the histogram and the CDF, which would match what was back in my risk profiler, along with the stats in the box on the upper left. Okay. But what I'm most interested in here is if you think about this combination of stochastic inputs here, the variance in price that I might experience, the variance in yield that I might experience, the variance in operating costs per acre that I might experience, is what this tool does is it combines those into a probability distribution for both your gross margin and your returns to management. So on my static budget here, I have 98.79, enter in some stochastic information, and if I go to my gross margin here, we can see that the mean for my gross margin is 16.34, given those stochastic elements involved. And if I take a look at the histograms, you can see the distribution of possible different gross margins that could occur. And probably one of the things that would be of most interest is to go along the cumulative distribution function and look at the probability that I would be profitable. And in this case, you're looking at right around a 30% probability that you're going to be profitable, if you look at that 2.29 in the gross margin sense. And you can pick out whatever value you want there in terms of a particular data point that you want to check. So the idea is to just help you pull together some information and take a look at the different possibilities and likelihoods of different things occurring and make an assessment of how much of a risk it really is to your operation. Okay, so with that, I'm going to stop the sharing. Turn it over to John for a look at our ranking management alternatives tool, Risk Ranker.
Okay, well, thank you, Jay. The seventh step, as way of reminder, is to actually rank management alternatives. So once we've gone through, and Jay's only been able this morning to touch on a couple of the steps in the tactical area of the process, a number of other tools there as well. But once you've stepped through those various tools and gone through the process to this point, you've accumulated a good amount of information, but you need to make the choice. What should we do to try to move toward our goals, and which strategy or which management alternative will do that best? And so we've put together this tool that's called the Risk Ranker. It starts off with this screen, which is the payoff matrix. It's kind of a variation on the theme of a number of things that Jay's already presented in the previous tools. It describes or gives you a place to put in on the left the various probability states or states of nature, we often call them. In this case, we've put in prices. So moving from poor prices to weak, to average, good, and then high prices. And we can also put in the probabilities associated with those various states of nature. Again, moving much like the histogram or the probability density function, looking at the probabilities on the tails of about 10%. An average, in this case, we're assuming or perhaps guessing that it will be about 40% of the time that we would see average prices. And the middle part of this chart then gives us a chance to put in the prices associated with those various states for various different alternatives. EWS Farms was looking at three different strategies. Cash, selling wheat on the cash market, hedging, with the hedging strategy, or possibly forward contracting with the elevator. And so put in the various prices, moving from poor prices here in the cash market, about $2.43 a bushel, upwards of around $5.40 they were guessing they might receive, when in a period of high prices, again, a probability of only about 10% of the time that they would see that. And then prices that go along with that too, in the hedging and contract strategies as well. What can we see in the tool once we've populated that table? Well, we can actually compare those different alternatives using the statistics that we've seen in the previous tools. Here at the lower left, we can actually see the statistical measures, the mean or average measures of variation around that mean with the variance or standard deviation. coefficient of variation, and then we also have reported the max and min for those various management alternatives. On the right, we can see the graph or probability density function of each of those alternatives, cash, being described in blue dots this morning, hedging in the red diamonds, and then contracting as listed here with the green stars. And we can see the differences between those strategies and what they would make in terms of our management outcomes graphically there, or another depiction as we've seen along the way is the cumulative density function, which describes probabilities and possible outcomes down here as well. The next tab is a risk index, is a kind of trying to look at what risk is contained within these various decisions and pricing strategies. And so given their risk profile from the EWS farms, Aaron and his father are basically down at this end of the scale, somewhat risk averse, whereas others in the family may be more up at the high risk aversion level, and so we would need to take that into consideration in our decision making. Yeah, when we're down here at this 0.5 or even up to 1 level of risk aversion, a quick way to try to get a handle on this is to look down here at the risk preference as a percent of the expected value. So basically what this is showing us is that risk would only have 1 to 2% explanation or variation into as to the outcomes that we might be considering or worried about given our current risk preference. Others at the higher end of the scale would have a higher value and would need to pay more attention to that. The risk ranker tool or tab here actually gives us a profile of the various risk management strategies that agricultural economists like to talk about. The first being maximizing the expected value. Another is maxi-max is another strategy. And as you click on those various strategies, it gives you a textual description here on the left side as to what those mean and how they might be used. Most importantly to us is on the right side, it takes our previous information, we put in the payoff matrix, and compares those alternatives and actually ranks them. So again, depending on our risk preferences, or you might say our risk personality, how we would like to manage risk, we have these different risk management strategies listed on the left, and then rank those as to how risk plays into them. So a rank of 1 indicates a higher level of, or a most preferred alternative, whereas 3 in this case, given we only have 3 alternatives, would be the lowest or least preferred alternative in terms of our objectives. Again, one would go in here and use the risk management perspective that best fits our personality to choose, and if we don't really know, we might go to the bottom, which shows the ranking that shows up most often. So it's the mode of the column there. And so in this case, cash is most preferred, but we've got to keep in mind that that also has the greatest variability in terms of outcome of prices that we might see. And so again, this tool is designed to help us actually make a choice of which alternative to pursue and how risk would play into that decision making. With that, we now move then to the operational stage of the game and describe basically how we would move beyond having made that choice to the final stages of the strategic risk management process. The last steps are actually describing and are helping us to focus in on the doing of the operation. Once we made that management choice, which alternative to pursue, how do we begin implementing that on a day-to-day basis? I actually like this quote by Peter Drucker, which says, plans are just wishful thinking unless they immediately degenerate into hard work. Unfortunately, that's the case, and sometimes is a challenge for us to move beyond making the decision and actually get into the implementation of a new way of operating. The first stage of this process is actually to worry about the day-to-day activities, putting into action the plans that we have in mind while focusing on and looking to accomplish the strategic goals in the long run and using the tactics that we outlined in the tactical planning stage of that process, as well as considering the constraints of our financial resources and other resources and living within the risk preference that we have as a family or as individuals involved in the management of the operation as a whole. To make that happen, obviously communication is absolutely essential, and not only between those that are making some of the decisions maybe on a day-to-day basis, but the other players that are involved. Everybody needs to be on the same page in terms of what plans we're looking to implement, and good timely communication is absolutely essential to making those plans come off in the long run. In terms of planning and establishing what steps and activities need to occur on a daily or weekly, even monthly basis, we've provided a number of different scheduling and activity planning forms in the course and in the textbook. And we also have a time management worksheet, which can be very helpful in terms of thinking about how to plan your time and activities. Obviously, as we go along, we've got to be concerned about monitoring the resource use, as well as the making sure that the activities that we've outlined and planned are actually occurring as we have designed. And we actually have a number of different worksheets to help accomplish this: a critical success indicators worksheet, resource flow plans, a risk management worksheet, which looks at the sources of risk and various management steps that we would use to address the threats and opportunities that those risks represent, as well as an action planning worksheet. Actually looking to monitor and adjust the process as we move along through the year. And keep in mind that contingencies happen. Actually expecting that some different result from following the similar or same management plan we've used in the past is kind of unreasonable, perhaps, and that we need to expect that things aren't going to go just the way we plan, and so to think about and be more proactive in our management of the operation as we begin to move our risk and risk management forward, we also need to think about what triggers to watch for. What's going to indicate, or what signals might be there be that we should watch for when those contingency plans ought to be implemented? And thinking about that ahead of time versus reacting when those things come about as we move along through the year. The final step of our strategic risk management process is to replan. And so again, periodically stopping and taking an inventory of where we are with our various resources, making sure we're still on course with the plans that we have in mind, doing a resource performance checkup, if you will, making sure that output is at the appropriate level, that enterprises are performing as we had desired, that we have adequate resources to move forward with coming years, as well as making sure that those resources and the resource base is in good health, or what things we might need to do and what steps we should take to improve the health and resilience of those resources into the future. In summary, this whole strategic risk management process has been put together with the idea of helping people to strategically and systematically manage the risk that they face in their operation. This morning, we've only had the chance to present the bare bones of a smattering of the tools that are sprinkled throughout this entire 10-step process. In fact, there are over 40 tools that we've designed to actually implement this process on a day-to-day basis for today's farms and ranches. The three of us represent a team of several individuals that have been working for about 3 or 4 years to get this material together. It's been published recently, as I mentioned early in the presentation, in this textbook called Applied Risk Management in Agriculture. Dana Hoag, professor at Colorado State University, took the lead on this and is the editor of the text, but a number of other folks contributed to the over 400 pages that are contained in this book, divided into 18 chapters. Those chapters cover not only the strategic risk management process we've talked about today, but also the tools for applying that process in a day-to-day management situation. To do that, we've used the EWS Farms and the Sprags to exemplify or demonstrate how those tools might be used. We also have chapters in the text covering the sources of risk, as well as a couple of chapters at the end for folks that might want to move beyond the basic discussion and coverage of risk that we've outlined in this text. In addition to that, we actually have a website that provides access to excerpts from the text, so you can go and read some of the material that's contained in the text today if you were interested. It also has information on ordering the text. If you should be interested in getting a copy of that, there's information there and a link to the publisher's page to get your order. We also have links to other right risk programs contained here, which include access to the Ag Survivor simulations, which we use to teach risk management around this, the region and the country. We have a number of different fact sheets on managing risk, a program schedule for workshops and things that we have planned for the coming months, as well as access to 7 online courses that we've put together for better managing risk that go beyond what we've discussed this morning in terms of Risk Navigator. In addition to all of that, we also have the 40-plus tools that we've developed available on this website. Those tools are listed either alphabetically or by chapter, as you can see on the screen, and you can simply click on the title of one of those tools, and the system will then download it to your desktop for use in managing various or investigating various different management questions or decisions that you might be looking at in your own situation. And those tools, I might point out, are available free of charge regardless of whether you purchase the text or not. So with that, John, I would like to offer our many thanks for the support in developing these tools and the text resources which are contributed to VA Risk Management Agency, or RMA. And I definitely want to thank you and the Ag Uncertain Times team, as well as the Western Extension Committee, for the opportunity for the three of us to present these materials this morning. So with that, we would be happy as a team to try to address any questions that folks in the audience might have presented to you guys behind the scenes.
Thank you, John, and Jay, and Dwayne. We do have a question from the audience, and was impressed by the power of the information and wanted to know how widely known is this information with producers, and are there folks out there using it? How many? Any ideas about that, or are you just getting this off the ground?
Well, I might respond to that, John, is that we've been doing an Ag Survivor simulation presentations for a good number of years. I think we're up to about 8 years of offerings of those at this point, and have been using that to create interest in risk management. However, the tools of Risk Navigator and the strategic risk management process are just hot off the press. Again, the text was only released in October. While we've offered a couple of regional seminars around this past year, it is really pretty new material, and so I think there's a lot of opportunities for folks to take a lot of advantage of these tools now that we're ready to release it with the text that goes along with it and describes how to use them.
Dwayne, are there any particular portions of the financial health checkup that cause producers problems?
I think the biggest roadblock is just getting started. Producers are a little bit intimidated by that financial information package they must put together for their lenders. They have some difficulty understanding the financial information once it is prepared, and that prevents them, I think, from doing a relatively good job of that financial analysis they need for their operation. And as we can see, a complete financial picture of the operation is, I think, is pretty critical and provides a tremendous amount of information about your financial health, and as a result, the kinds of actions that might be necessary to help maintain or correct trends that you might see.
Thank you. Jay, a question for you. In your experience, how comfortable are producers difference in dealing with probability distributions?
On the surface, they can be very intimidated by those, which, you know, we try to design our tools to take some of that intimidation factor away, and in particular, coming up with a minimum and a maximum and a most likely value. Most producers are comfortable putting that information together and can see how that can translate into a distribution. The other thing I would mention on that is, you know, the idea of subjective probabilities and reassuring producers that, you know, their instincts do weigh into, you know, coming up with a good representation of the probabilities that they face, and they do have experiences to come into play and information that perhaps can be fairly difficult to quantify. And that's, you know, what we're trying to get at somewhat with those tools is to make them simple and to put them in a context that they're comfortable with. Surprisingly, most of them, you know, they come around and are very comfortable addressing probabilities, maybe not in a huge statistical sense, but certainly in a sense that they can use it in making decisions.
Good. Well, thank you. And John, another question in from the audience. How do farm health and safety figure into risk identification and planning?
Well, definitely the tools that we've designed have the possibility of considering risk for and from many of the different sources, if not all of them. And so we would recommend that the tools, not only in the strategic level in terms of risk preference and trying to establish where the people that are involved in the situation are with their, you know, ability and willingness to carry risk, but also moving forward in terms of planning, you can build in those health and safety risk factors into the various tactical level tools and assign various probabilities and so on that should go with them. And so in that way, I believe we could accommodate nearly any kind of risk that a person might be thinking would influence a farm or ranch and help the manager and the other folks that are involved in the operation to consider what might be the best management strategy to manage the risk given the consequences, the threats, the opportunities that might be contained within those risks.
And I want to throw in a little plug. Our October series covered families in crisis and dealt with some mental health kinds of issues, stress management and that. And there's a wealth of resources on our webpage around that. And John, I'd like to come back to you. You talked briefly about a strategic goal worksheet. Does your book provide any additional insights into setting goals or strategic planning?
Well, actually, you know, the title of the step is determining your goals for managing risk, but the section of the text goes a little beyond that and does try to describe and provide for the opportunity for folks to think a little bit more about the strategic planning of other dimensions of the operation in addition to risk. And so I think anybody that was interested would benefit from taking a look at that and looking to maybe more strategically manage the rest of the operation as well. I believe those worksheets and the tools that we've built there would be equally appropriate for other aspects of the operation as well.
We're getting close to the time when we need to sign off. So I've got two last questions, one for Jay, and then I've got a last one for Duane, and I'll give him the last word. And Jay, in the crop budget generator, how much of that information can a person change to customize it to their own operation?
That is in a worksheet format, but parts of it are protected so that it maintains its functionality and that you don't accidentally wipe out something. So you can't add columns or add rows to that budget that you see there, but you can pretty much change all of the data and information in there. So, you know, you can change it from wheat to corn. You can certainly change any of the numbers that you see displayed there and turn it into a budget for your own operation.
Thank you. And Duane, question, a lot of producers are headed into the time when they're going to be going in and sitting down with their lenders looking for operating capital. So in the coming months, what is your perspective? What are the specific financial indicators that lenders might be looking at? Any comments you might have around that?
I think in the next few months, lenders have started watching primarily liquidity and repayment capacity ratios. Those will give short-term indicators of how financially sound the operation is currently and coming into the next production cycle, the next calendar year, 2010. So they'll be paying a lot of attention to those. And as you can see at the start of our presentation today, those were some of the ratios that were most badly hurt by the decline in prices, the potential declines in yields, and things that are going on in the agricultural sector. Many producers experience these, the dairy and hog industry in particular, and I think the liquidity repayment capacity ratios will be top on their list.
Well, Jay, John, and Duane, thank you very much. This is a powerful set of information. I know you've barely kind of skimmed over the surface. We would encourage folks to follow up, go to that web page, look at some of that information. We have a what we call a file sharing pod here that if you click on one of these files and then highlight it, go down and click on Save to My Computer. It'll give you some instructions how you can directly download this information, virus-free information, that has all of the web addresses that you need to go to our Ag and Uncertain Times webpage I think some of the right risk websites and the website information that was John Hewlett presented. If you want to go back through this, the slideshow that each of these folks, I believe, is up on the Ag and Uncertain Times website now. Within a day or two, the actual presentations, recording of their presentations will be up there as well, and you can go back and review them. So I thank you again for all of the hard work that Duane, Jay, and John put into this presentation. Thank you that are in the audience that signed on with us. And just a reminder, on December 2nd, we'll be back with an economist from the Federal Reserve System out of the Omaha Bank. Thank you. We'll see you in December.